This is Jeff Ament from Pearl Jam, and you're listening to 89.9 KGPR, Great Falls, Montana.
On today's program, Trevor Kavanaugh, owner of Smoked American Barbecue, and how COVID-19 has affected business. Susie McIntyre, Library Director for the Great Falls Public Library, and Bill Tackey, Vice President of the Great Falls Public Library Foundation, with information about the Bookmobile Bookathon and the purchase of a new bookmobile. Welcome to Voices and Views. Good afternoon and welcome to Voices and Views. My name is Tom Halverson, and on the phone with me today I have Trevor Kavanaugh. Trevor is the owner of Smoked American Barbecue in Great Falls. Good afternoon, Trevor.
Hey, good afternoon, Tom.
And from what I understand, for people in Great Falls, Smoked American Barbecue used to be the Beer Baron or the Pizza Baron, is that correct?
That is correct, yes. Building's about 95 years old.
Wow. And where are you guys located at?
203 2nd Avenue North.
Mm-hmm. And Smoked American Barbecue, what kind of delicious stuff do you guys serve down there?
We serve traditional American barbecue food. So usually when you're describing barbecue, you're selecting a certain region, whether you're saying Texas-style barbecue, Kansas-style barbecue, Memphis, you know. And what we've done with all our travels and going throughout the country is I find regions specialize in a certain meat, certain rubs, certain sauces. And I like more of an American barbecue approach to where we don't taste the same in all our meats across the board. Texas-style brisket, Memphis on the ribs, North Carolina-style on the pulled pork. So I picked my favorites of each meat across the country and crafted the blends of the spices and what we've done with our house-made sauces as well, too, to make each dish unique.
Well, it sounds more like a science. I mean, you really have to kind of know your business, huh?
A lot of trial and error.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of years, a lot of homework went into this.
And how about sides? You guys also are known for your sides. It almost tastes like grandma's cooking.
Yes. No, we craft all our own sides. A lot of trial and error there. But, you know, a lot of what we found, too, is just staying with fresh, high-quality ingredients and don't compromise on those at all. I mean, it's really easy to pick up a pre-made potato salad or baked beans or what have you. But we feel that, you know, it needs to be made with the highest quality ingredients as fresh as possible. So not only is the meat served and smoked fresh daily, but the sides as well.
And how did you get involved? I mean, what was the big decision, and how long ago did you decide this is what you wanted to do?
I probably put a business plan together about 12 years ago now. I was running a local dealership here in town. Good family, good to work for, but I always wanted to do something for myself. And the biggest thing was kind of to leave a legacy and put my individual mark on something and then leave something for my family that could take over as well, too. And this is something I truly enjoy. So I love sales, I love people, and I love barbecue. So we kind of just put it together. I it was a big risk because I was compensated very well by the family that I worked for. And, you know, it kind of got to the point where, you know, money wasn't the big driver as much as just the individual happiness and being able to share, you know, our talents with the community. So it was a hard decision to do. But once we made the decision and once we've done it, now it feels like without a doubt it was the right decision.
So it is kind of a family affair.
Absolutely. Yeah, my wife works right by my side. Both my sons work there. My daughter works there. We hired one of my top salesmen away from the dealership. He runs my back of house. So, I mean, it's a tight-knit organization, very little turnover. And, you know, we're just grooming people within the family to do more and more every day.
Now, before COVID-19 came into our picture, were you surprised on how well you were doing as a business? Because your business seemed to really take off.
Yeah, we anticipated, you know, a certain amount for lunch volume every day based upon, you know, how many people were downtown, what we thought we could draw in. But it went crazy. I mean, it went to the point where, you know, what we expected to do in a day, and pounds of meat, you know, that it, all of a sudden we're doing, you know, 400 or 500 pounds of meat a day. Which it just got nuts. It's like you just couldn't keep up with it at all. And the lunch lines were just insane. So it was fun because I love that energy. I love lines out the door, every seat filled in the place, music jamming, you know, and just noisy. And I love that energy. You know, it kind of like drives us. It's like just an adrenaline rush. We have not had indoor seating since March. Still have the heavy lines, but it's so bizarre when it gets quiet. Because I love that energy from that noise and people and just the camaraderie. And that's what barbecue is. Barbecue is for sharing. It's for family and friends. So I can't wait till we get everybody back inside again.
Boy, do you think we'll ever get back to that point?
I think we have to. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's two things. We're social beings as humans. And number two, there's a thing in the American spirit that just epitomizes freedom and independence. I think it would crush our human spirit, and I think it would be completely against who we are as Americans. Mm-hmm. And that's probably why we're spiking more than anybody else around the world, is because we just like our independence.
That's
obviously we're choosing our independence over personal safeties at this point.
Well, that's a good point. There is a faction of people out there that, you know, this is freedom, you know, to do what we can do, our independence. And then the other half is more kind of concerned about the virus actually, you know, affecting them, getting sick from it. So COVID-19, here you are, Smoke Barbecue, you're downtown, you're doing well. And what was your first hint of COVID-19? How did that enter the picture?
Started kind of getting hints of it in February, watching what was happening as a global level. I was thinking more H1N1, you know, I was looking at sanitation issues. You know, I never anticipated where it's gone to. In March, it started feeling like more of a reality, and that's where we decided as a restaurant, before it was mandated anywhere in the state of Montana and for the most part around the U.S., we decided that we would go a takeout style only. And the reason behind that was I was trying to be a little bit proactive and do something that set a style, set a mandate that was good and consistent for the staff and something that the customer would gradually get used to. And I figured if we just drew the line in the sand and said, until this gets better, we're not going to change back to indoor seating. We're going to do quick, casual, food to go super quick, which our line is crazy quick. I mean, we get people in and out super quick. Mm-hmm. We felt it was safer for the customer. We felt it was safer for us, and we felt we could do more than having to individually bus tables, keep stuff sanitized there. I never anticipated it would go on this long. I'm thinking this stuff would be like 2-3 months. We'll be in and out of this. We'll take a slight dip in sales, and then let's just rock and roll out of the back end. And here we are, you know, going into the end of the year and still doing it.
Let's concentrate. Let's talk a little bit about some of the safety measures that you have taken. I do remember those raucous days when you go in there and all the tables are filled and, you know, you hear everybody talking and everyone's having a good time and it spills outside into your picnic tables. But now you come in there and there's a little bit of social distancing, and it kind of reminds me of Seinfeld, if you've watched Seinfeld, the Soup Nazi episode where you come right up to the counter, you put your order in, and you slide to the left, and you kind of work your way down. Of course, you're not, you know, denying food to anybody, I don't think. But why don't we talk about some of the safety precautions that you've installed, that you've started?
Sure. So everybody in the line that touches food is gloved, always has been since day one, and this is pre-COVID. I mean, we've always worn gloves on the line. So it's limited interaction with the with directly with the customer. You're not touching the customer at all. Okay. The only person that that interacts directly with the consumer, hands them their food or hands them a drink or takes a credit card or what have you, is the cashier. So we're keeping everything separated from the customer. The customer can't get too close to us. We can't get too close to them. Their food is only handled by people that are completely sanitized. We have a drink runner. And so their ticket goes off to the side. They sign off the side. So what we're trying to do is keep the customer spaced, keep them moving down the line quickly, and get them in and out as quick as we can. What the challenge is because they're not in there sitting there eating lunch, there's a lot of socializing. We have a ton of regulars. I know what they eat. I know what my name. I know how they like their food, what cuts of meat they want. And you got to line out the door. And if that guy is sitting down in the restaurant, you can shoot the breeze with him. But if he's going in and out because it's takeout, it's a 30-second conversation. And it's crazy because you got people looking at their watches when that line's out the door. But you want to visit with the guy still because you know they're a patron and it's something I enjoy. So it's crazy.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that because when I've come in there and we've started a conversation, I've always turned around and looked to see if there's someone behind me because I didn't want to hold up the line, you know.
Right. So yeah, my wife jumps in all the time and tries to move me down the line and takes over the knife and starts cutting meat and lets me finish the conversation.
That's funny. So have you had to redirect your focus a little bit? I mean, you're not serving inside. Are there other aspects of your business that have picked up or you've kind of directed your focus to?
Yeah, it's the big thing for us is we want to keep the business model as close to the original as we can. Because I don't like big changes. I think that's confusing for the customer, and I think it's confusing for the employee. However, you have to be able to adapt as this stuff is changing. As there's, you know, this second spike across the U.S., and in particular, a heavy, probably even just a first spike in Montana, people are now taking it serious, where I don't think they were taking it serious through the summer months. And, you know, they're more reserved. They're not going out as often. How do I make them know, you know, hey, we're a safe facility. We're gonna take care of you like we have day one. So you're looking at your business model a little bit closer and saying, okay, I need to maximize everything I can. I need to really control costs. We're going into the winter months. There's a spike. It's a concern. I mean, and I look at it and say, you know, we're a busy restaurant. I consider myself successful through this pandemic. I struggle to understand what happens with a restaurant that wasn't doing great going into this and what in God's green earth are they doing now. And then you look at it and say, these places are sit down only, don't really have a good to go style. I don't know how they're doing it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I struggle to understand how they're going to make it through this.
Now, do you work with other businesses? Have you spoken with other businesses in town?
I talk to other businesses. I talk to other local business owners. We patronize a lot of local places. I'm not big on the big box stores. Not that I have anything against them. This is my focus, and this is what I want to see happen, is when this is all said and done and we go back to normal, I want these local businesses to still be around. The huge box stores and the franchises have a branding and a system and a product that's already well known nationally. They have funding that's available to them that mom-and-pop places don't. They have product lines and they have purveyors that can supply them with everything they need a lot more readily than, you know, some of the mom-and-pop places. So the people that are, you know, that are really working hard to keep their businesses open, I completely respect what they're doing. And I'm going to patronize them. I'm going to take care of them where I can. You know, so, I mean, I reach out to guys, even though I have, you know, I use Sysco for our meat purveyor on all our meats because they're, you know, they're about the only ones that can supply us with our volume. I reach out to people locally where I can, where they can fill in the gaps for me because I want to see them continue to survive.
Sure. And how about help from the city? I want to kind of talk about, I guess a few months ago, the federal government, we'll start there, offered a kind of a COVID-19 package and kind of offered assistance to businesses. Now, is that on a federal, just the federal level, or is that state level and city level?
The federal level and the state programs and the federal programs rapid in response, rapid in funding. Some of them are confusing as to what you do after the fact. You know, if you've gotten SBA loans, emergency disaster loans, when do the payments restart, at what interest rates? They're very vague on that. They keep kicking back the deadlines as to when payments start. And I think as our Congress meets and they keep continuing on with the CARES Act and the second level of PPP, that they're kind of evolving, realizing this has gone on longer than they had first anticipated. So they're kicking back interest, you know, and they're kicking back the first payment due dates. So that's confusing. I don't think you ever want to miss a payment as a business. So, on the local level, I don't think anything's really ever happened monetarily. I don't know if I've really felt that our local leaders have done a great job on saying, you know, do you need help with your business model? This is how we can help you out. This is my personal opinion, but I just have some different feelings on how our commissioners and our local people support business growth in Great Falls. You know, we were on track to build an outdoor venue this year. It's just crazy that I wanted to expand my business in the middle of COVID and we've gotten very little support for it. I, without probably getting too deep into politics,
sure.
it's bizarre to me that we wanted to grow in the middle of COVID, and I guarantee you there wasn't very many businesses asking the local leaders for help in growing. And it's kind of fallen on deaf ears. So,
well, maybe somebody's listened to this interview, and
I would love that because, you know, we love downtown, we love Great Falls, we love our support, and we want to grow our business, and I'm willing to grow it in the middle of a pandemic. Mm-hmm. So, wow. I think that's a positive thing.
And how about with the City County Health Department? Have you had any contact with them? Do they come in?
You know, we have different supervisors and whatnot that are good patrons of ours. We reach out to them. We get a lot of emails and updates from them. I think they've done a pretty good job supporting businesses, realizing that they don't have the best control over their patrons on whether they wear a mask or not. And unfortunately, a lot of the mask wearing has turned political. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, we just want to survive. We want to survive economically. We want to survive physically as well, too. So, I mean, it's we don't allow vendors into the building anymore. We haven't had vendors in the building in quite a while. Our employees wear masks back of house. You know, FedEx drops their packages off site outside. They don't come in the building. I have a separate receiving room that is completely segregated from the restaurant. So if when the food purveyors are bringing food in, that's completely separate from everybody else. So it can be sanitized. They don't come into the rest of the building, you know, so we've taken a lot of preventative measures to keep ourselves safe. And it, you know, that's something we're going to do until, you know, we see this vaccine that helps prevent it completely.
Mm-hmm. How about resistance from customers to wear a mask?
There's a lot. But, you know, I don't feel, as a business owner, it's my job to tell them to wear a mask. I believe in people's individual freedoms. I would like them to see wear a mask. Where we draw the line is when somebody comes in who's ill, mm-hmm. and not wearing a mask, or ill and wearing a mask. That exposure is just something that we won't tolerate. Mm-hmm. We're a quick line. People get in and out pretty quick, but there's a large, and I would say 30 to 40% of the clients out there who come in, and I'd say this is most businesses I see, aren't wearing a mask. And is it for health reasons? Is it for political reasons? Is it for personal reasons? I'm not going to sit there and try and dissect why they're not wearing the mask. That's why we're continuing with not allowing for any sit down. You know, we want that separation. We want them in and out of the building quick. And if they're not taking their own health seriously, then they're not taking my health seriously or my customer's health seriously. So it's, I'm not going to tell them they have to leave unless they're physically ill, but it's kind of crazy that, you know, maybe we should just kind of do our part and let's get through this. Because the quicker we get through this, the faster we're back to normal.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. Do you think some of this is COVID-19 fatigue? How much do you think that's a factor?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I have it. I get it. I mean, it's, you know, I like to keep really high spirits. I like having fun with my job. I don't want to see it as work. I seriously enjoy our customers. I love what I'm doing. I don't like to look at the end of the day and say, did we pay the bills today? I just want to assume it happened. Mm-hmm. But when this is going on, you have to look at it every day because we have to sell out every day. We carry nothing over. Unlike a traditional restaurant, I could have huge amounts of waste at the end of the day if the customers don't show up. Mm-hmm. I've decided to smoke 24 hours in advance for the next day. So once I've made that decision, I have to have that sold out every day. That is nerve-wracking. And if you undersell and you sell out by 2 o'clock, you're kicking yourself in the fanny for not putting more on the smoker. So I used to be able to, like, clockwork, be able to track, and I'd keep graphs and track everything completely on to, you know, what our daily sales were. But in the middle of this, it's so chaotic. There's no rhyme or reason to what people are buying every day. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's I can't undersell and I can't oversell. So, I mean, at the end of the day, anything that I have left, 3 to 4 pounds goes in the beans every night. Chopped brisket goes in the beans every night. And the rest goes to the mission or the why. You know, so it's there's been quite a few days as of late that the why and the mission eat pretty well.
You know, it's a little nerve-wracking for the customer, too, if he likes his turkey as much as I do. I know, yeah. I have to get in there early, otherwise I'm not getting it. So,
yeah.
You know, I understand
right.
that. And I just kind of curious, too, you offer catering, and is anything coming up for Thanksgiving? I understand you're offering.
We do, yeah. You know, we've had a lot of pre-orders for Thanksgiving. We do whole turkey breast for Thanksgiving. We're not going to be open. So our days that we're open are Tuesday through Saturday, 11 a.m. till 4 or sell out. So that week of Thanksgiving, we will be open the Friday and Saturday after Thanksgiving. But leading up to that Tuesday, Wednesday, and that Thursday, we're closed. So we're doing pre-orders with pickup this week going through Saturday. And what we do is we smoke a whole turkey breast or what have you. A lot of people order brisket, too. And we do a cool down, and we cryo that with reheating instructions on how to reheat. And it works really well, you know. I probably have, oh, criminies, I don't know how many pounds of turkey already that we'll be smoking up this week for people for Thanksgiving. So we'll do a lot of turkeys for Thanksgiving, that's for dang sure.
'Tis the season.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, too, the economy and the way the health is kind of, you know, pushing with the economy. You know, should we be open? Should we be safe and close down a little bit more? You know, some of these other restaurants and businesses actually rely on a lot of the people coming in. And you made a good point about just bringing people in and getting them out. You know, if there was another, you know, more restrictions or anything, how would you guys handle that? I mean, it seems like it really wouldn't bother you too much because you've got a system down.
We have a really good system. So I study barbecue all around the country. I always have. I have for years, but I've studied people's business model during this pandemic as to what they're doing. So Texas in particular is taking it pretty tough, and they do a curbside only pickup. There's no inside dining. There's no going in the restaurant to pick this up. You either have got to go through a drive-through or you've got to get your stuff curbside. So one of my biggest inspirations on barbecue is Aaron Franklin, Franklin's Barbecue down in Texas. They're curbside only. 3 pound minimum order. It's just crazy to hear him talk. and say, and this guy does, you know, 100 plus brisket a day, and talk about his business being 50% of what it was before. But they're literally taking these orders, putting them together, running them out to people's cars. They don't interact with the people in the car. They have them open the tailgate of the truck or open their trunk up and put the food in there. And you're like, oh, criminies, what happens if it gets to that?
Right.
But, you know, if something were to happen in Montana again, I could see them eliminating indoor dining again and going to pickup only. So, I mean, that's why we picked this business model. That's why we've not opened seating again inside. We just want a consistent business model all the way through this pandemic that we hope doesn't have to change.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if our restaurants survive another shutdown if they close seating again. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really tough on them. Mm-hmm. I mean, they survived the first round. We've already seen a couple of restaurants close that we'll never see reopen again. But these guys, it's going to be a tough road ahead if they shut them down again. I hope it doesn't come to that. I really do. Which means I think we all need to do our part as a community, as a state, as a country, to just make sure not only the people that are high risk survive this, but our businesses survive this as well. If you want your independence, if you want your freedom, get us through this as quickly as possible and let's get back to normal.
I think it's a benefit living in Montana, though, compared to some of these other places with high volumes of people. We are spread out a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and you know, I think we're more of an outdoor recreation state than a lot of places around us. And, you know, we love being outdoors as a family. And just this summer, watching how many people are at the lake, how many people are out, you know, using their motorcycles, ATVs, UTVs, how many campgrounds were just packed. You know, it was good to see people getting out there and recreating. And that's important. Get out there, get the fresh air, get the sun. Don't sit in your house and mope. You know, let's get outside and be busy. Mm-hmm. And I hope we continue that trend through the winter months, you know, pick up some winter activities, get outside, get that sunshine, get healthy.
How's it affected you personally, you and your family? Are you doing things a little bit different?
Yeah, we do stuff different. You know, we love going out to eat.
Nobody cooks.
At the end of the day.
Uh-huh.
You know, and there's local people that we just really enjoy. We also love traveling. You know, I mean, we haven't been, you know. Mm-hmm. And I love going to Phoenix. I love going to the Florida Keys. And it's like, I'm trying to remember when was the last time I was in a hotel or when the last time I was on an airline. And it just seems so bizarre. And mm-hmm. I love going out. I love vacation. I love working hard and I love playing hard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's been none of that. So keeping your sanity, unwinding at the end of the day, finding a healthful way to kind of release your stresses, it's interesting. It's definitely interesting. I'm lucky I have the family support I do.
Right.
I'm lucky to have a really good customer base. And I think it's sometimes my job never to let the customer see us sweat
mm-hmm.
or that we're stressed or that we're maybe a little bit worried about, you know, finances or what have you. Because when you come in and eat, you're looking for a release as well, too. You're looking for camaraderie. You're looking for good food. You're looking for, me to say something, you know, to keep your day bright. So I can't let people see if I'm not having the best of day,
right.
You know. They want something different than they can get at their home when they're coming out to eat. And I hope we provide that.
You know, I miss your YouTube movies, your little spoofs you guys used to do. So you guys are actors, too.
I need to do another one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been wanting to do one Office Spaceballs parody. it's just, you know, I love Mel Brooks.
Sure.
And, it's just such a great movie, and I think they're fun to do. We kind of got in a little bit of trouble when we did the last one because we kind of targeted not maliciously, but just because of the way we did the spot.
Funny.
But we
sure.
targeted a franchise restaurant. Yeah, we got in a little bit of trouble. So I'm fairly certain that the franchise lawyers are a little a little more aggressive than mine. So I backed off.
Sure. That's funny. Well, my name's Tom Halverson. We're speaking with Trevor Cavanaugh. He is the owner of Smoked American Barbecue. Trevor, do you have any final words? Have we talked about everything? Is there anything you want to add at this time?
I think it's important through all of this to just remember who you are as an individual. And don't be afraid to, even if there's something monetarily you can't do for a small business, just let them know they matter to you. Mm-hmm. You know, I have customers that walk by that are just downtown people, you know, and live downtown, and they'll poke their head in the door and say, "Hey, I already grabbed lunch today, but just want to let you know we appreciate what you do." Yeah. And that is so important to us. You know, one of the best things I've ever heard customers say, and they say it repeatedly, is "Thank you for staying open." Yeah. And that means so much to us. You know, that's the stuff that carries us through the tough times.
Well, Trevor, I thank you for being open, and I wish you well in the future. And I want to thank you for doing this interview. Trevor Cavanaugh.
Absolutely.
Owner of Smoked American Barbecue. Thank you so much for being on Voices and Views.
Thanks, Tom.
Good afternoon and welcome to Voices and Views. My name is Tom Halverson, and on the phone today, I have Susie McIntyre. She is the Library Director for the Great Falls Public Library, and Bill Tackey, Vice President of the Great Falls Public Library Foundation. Good afternoon to both of you.
Hello, thank you.
And we are here to talk about a bookmobile campaign entitled Bookmobile Bookathon. Who wants to start this out? Tell us all about it, please.
Well, the library has provided a bookmobile service for many years, and we currently travel all across Cascade County and within the city of Great Falls, bringing literacy and books and friendship and support to all different people in our community. But our current bookmobile has over 110,000 miles on it and is really worn out and needs to be replaced. So we have ordered a brand new bookmobile that is going to be a fantastic resource for our community. And the Bookmobile Bookathon is an effort to help us pay for that new resource so that we can continue to provide service across Cascade County.
Now, I wasn't aware there's actually a bookmobile store or a bookmobile lot that sells bookmobiles. Where are you getting this from?
We are getting it from a company that's called Farber Specialty Vehicles, and they make bookmobiles and things like ambulances and other real specialty type of things. But they we looked at a lot of different companies, and this was a company that had a really great reputation and was able to provide us with all the things we were looking for. Plus, they have they were part of a group that contracts with the city of Great Falls, so we were able to get a really good discount in our contract with them.
And, of course, this bookmobile bus has modifications on it. Can you compare the two, the old one and the new one? Is anything going to be different?
There's actually going to be several things that are different. Probably the thing that we're most excited about is the new bookmobile is going to have Wi-Fi capabilities. So everywhere the bookmobile goes, the internet will come along with it. So we will be able to provide that service even in the most rural areas of our community. The other thing that's going to be different is we actually opted for a bookmobile that's a little bit has a little bit less shelf space, but is on a truck chassis. That's going to be a lot more robust. Our current bookmobile, sometimes out on those winter roads, when when Jesse Domanovich, who's our bookmobile driver, is out on a gravel road and there's wind blowing, it's not the safest thing. So this vehicle is going to be much more suited for Montana winter driving.
Now, who does the bookmobile serve? How much area coverage does the bookmobile serve?
Well, we go all across Cascade County. So we do run across Cascade County, and we do service in the city of Great Falls. So within Great Falls, we go to various learning centers and senior centers, and then she also goes to specialty things. So like in the summer when the Great Falls Public Schools was doing Summer Read 6, we went along on those stops to help provide access to books for kids. And then out in the county, we go to several different Hutterite colonies. We go to the Ohm School. We go to Wedsworth. We go to Fort Shaw, Sun River, Vaughn, Belt. And in the summer, we go to Monarch and Neihardt.
Well, it sounds to me like you want a very stable bus to actually go to all those places instead of an old bus with 110,000 miles on it.
Yes.
Now, my next question, what services are available? What do you have to offer through the bookmobile?
The bookmobile provides materials. So you can either come on and in non-COVID times, you could come on to the bookmobile and browse through the materials and decide what you wanted to check out. Right now, we're asking people to place holds on materials through our online catalog so that we don't have, it's very hard to do social distancing on the bookmobile. But she helps, in normal times, she helps kids and adults and all sorts of people find the materials that they love. So for the Hutterite colonies, we stock a lot of Christian fiction and wonderful westerns and a lot of nonfiction. And she has a great collection for the schools of juvenile nonfiction and lots of great picture books and all sorts of things.
And how about audiobooks? Do you offer audiobooks?
If you place a hold on an audiobook, you can we can bring you one, but we don't normally put the audiobook CDs on the bookmobile. You can, of course, access audiobooks also through our online app, which is the Libby app. And if you have a library card, you can download ebooks and e-audiobooks from the comfort of your home. But if you request an audiobook, we can bring it, but it's not normally stocked on the bookmobile.
And this is a free service, correct?
It is free. It is free for the user. Of course, it is supported by our wonderful tax dollars and by donations from the community.
Now, the big concern is COVID-19. How are you guys going to operate this, given the circumstances?
Well, right now, the bookmobile is running just as a pickup drop-off service. So our bookmobile driver is in contact with all the stops that she makes, and it is actually taking a lot of time for her to coordinate with people. And so she just has boxes of books or materials for people, and she takes their returns and gives them their books without kind of in a contactless way.
And with this campaign, how long is the campaign lasting for, and when do you foresee actually purchasing this bus?
Well, the bookmobile's already been ordered, and we've already put a down payment on it. So so we are trusting that we are going to be able to rely on our community like we have for years and years to support us. So it is being built right now. And we hope to have it delivered sometime in March or April.
I'm thinking there's probably going to be a schedule of stops maybe on your webpage once the bus is in full service?
Yes. And people also can go to our website right now and see the current stops and dates for when we're going out for the pickup drop-off service. And we always have an updated schedule on there.
I'd like to turn my attention to Bill Tackey. He is the Vice President of the Great Falls Public Library Foundation. Bill, can you kind of give us an overview of your foundation, please?
Well, the foundation actually was founded back in 1968, right after the new library was built, to really support the library in ways that would not be feasible for the city to support, and to add to the quality of services and the variety of services. And along that line, over the years, they've developed different ways of bringing in funds. But one of the primary fundraisers now is the Bookathon. The Bookathon is in, I believe, its 31st year now, and it at one time was a phone-a-thon. And it's geared towards primarily supporting children and youth services at the library. And over time, it was decided that all the monies raised through the Bookathon should go directly. At one time, it was 50%. Now we do 100% of the monies raised. And over the course of time, as we became aware that the bookmobile was going to need replacement, and we knew that that was going to be difficult to get funding through other sources, we talked about how we might help. It was decided by the foundation board members that we would run the bookmobile campaign in conjunction with this year's Bookathon campaign. And generally, that starts in November, and the Bookathon goes through March, and people can donate to the bookmobile directly through donations to the box number, which is 742, the Great Falls Public Library Foundation, box 742, Great Falls, Montana, 59403, or they can also go online to gfplf.org, and there's a information about the foundation there, and there's also a donation button to click on. And when filling out on the donation, if the donation is going to be specifically for the bookmobile campaign, there's a memo line to put that in. And if individuals who've donated to the Bookathon in the past feel like they just want to donate for the books and materials for the children and youth, they can also put that in the memo line. So we can continue both campaigns in conjunction. The idea is that the bookmobile will cost just under $200,000 just to have the vehicle set up, but it'll be empty when it comes to having the materials needed for learning. And so our overall campaign is for $255,000. And with that, the idea is that we will have a fully stocked, up-to-date bookmobile ready to go on the road. So far, with our campaign underway, we've raised over $50,000 in donations. But in addition to that, we have pledged grant for $50,000 when the bookmobile campaign reaches $150,000. So we're a little over a third of the way there, and we hope to be able to reach that part of the goal, particularly sometime after the first of the year, if possible, so we know that we will certainly be able to pay for the vehicle, and then to continue the campaign to be able to get materials for the library that will help stock the bookmobile. As indicated, the bookmobile really is for everybody, from children to the elderly, but it certainly is a resource for the children in our community throughout the county. And so from that standpoint, we felt it was a very easy tie-in to combine the bookmobile with the Bookathon campaign. I would also mention that we've sought donations from various businesses, and we offer what's called a sponsorship of the bookmobile, and the primary sponsorship would be $50,000. A secondary sponsorship would be $25,000, And if businesses choose to sponsor at that level, they will have their name on the bookmobile. And so it would be a very prominent evidence of the support they've provided to the community. When we've looked back at the history of the bookmobiles over the years, actually the first bookmobile in Montana was started in Cascade County. It was a WPA project and the Works Progress Administration. And so that's where the funding came from. And it was in 1940, and that was like a pickup with a metal box in the back full of books. But it went out to about four different counties. Well, the funding for that went away as soon as the war started. And it wasn't until 1956 when the library was started its first bookmobile service. And that was started actually primarily by Elma Smith Jacobs. She grew up in Great Falls. She went away to school at Talladega University in Alabama. And although she was originally going to go into social work, once she got there, she developed a strong interest in library science. She worked in the library, and she went on to get her degrees there in, I believe, at Columbia, New York. And during that time, she worked at the library in Alabama and gained experience with the bookmobile service and just how effective that was for people in the rural communities, for the kids in the rural communities to gain learning, access to learning resources they otherwise wouldn't have. So when she came back to Great Falls several years later and began working at the public library here, before she even became the director, she actually was the one who helped get started the new bookmobile service out of the library in 1956. And bookmobiles seem to last about 20 years if you look through the history. Now, one time, Great Falls, I think, was running as many as three bookmobiles at a time because of all the areas they serviced, because they did, for a while, go out beyond Cascade County to a number of counties that were part of the program. But for several years now, it's just been within Cascade County, and it's been the one bookmobile. And the current one, as Susie has indicated, is well beyond its lifetime to provide a safe, effective service. And that's really the reason to now be looking at a replacement. And the foundation is really a resource for the library to take on campaigns of this nature and see that we can do as much as possible to help the community provide support. And Great Falls is, and surrounding area, has been a wonderful community in the past and continues to be. And just the response we've had so far is an excellent example of that.
I am thinking that your goal, the campaign goal, is $150,000. Is that correct?
Well, for the bookmobile itself, if we reach that with funds designated, and if people donate funds saying for greatest need, it'll still go to the bookmobile campaign to reach that part. But our overall campaign is the $255,000. So if we reach the $150,000 for funds going specifically to the bookmobile, then we'll have the bookmobile itself covered, and we'll continue on with the full campaign, because the bookathon campaign each year is a major funding source for the library, for the children and youth services. So we felt we shouldn't be excluding that, but rather combining it. So that's why our overall goal is the $255,000.
That must be an old bus then, huh? A really old bus.
It's over 20 years old, the bus frame that the current bookmobile is on. And as Susie indicated, the new bookmobile will have a truck frame. Right. So it'll actually look more like a truck, but still be very accessible, for the community to be able to access the books within. It'll have the wheelchair lift, but it'll be sturdy to last the roads of Montana, which have really taken their toll on past bookmobiles. In reading through the history, even of the one before the current one, it was falling apart in many ways before they managed to replace it. And at that time, there was actually one donor that was the primary one who financed the current bookmobile.
Gosh, what do you do with an old bookmobile? Is there a market for old bookmobiles? That must be tough.
Well, we might be able to sell it to one of the small neighboring libraries in one of our next door counties if they don't want to take it on the back roads as much.
Now I'm imagining you're going to have a big celebration to kick this off. Are you going to break, a bottle of champagne over the bow of
Like that? Depends. Our celebration plans are, of course, a little bit dependent upon how things are going with COVID-19.
Sure.
But if you'd like to provide the champagne, we would be happy to do that.
And again, if somebody wants to donate, where do they go to donate?
They can mail donations to the Great Falls Public Library Foundation at P.O. Box 742, Great Falls, Montana 59403. Or they can go online to the website, which is gfpls.org. And the information is there about the foundation and the campaign. And when they click on the donate, it'll bring up a page that they enter the information for their donation. And if they put on what's called the memo line, that's where they can indicate that their donation is specifically for the bookmobile, or if they have other wishes to say, you know, greatest need, or if they want to specifically say for the book-a-thon, if, you know, they're familiar with how they've donated, you know, in the past. But the memo line would be the key place to put bookmobile so that we know when the donation comes in that that's what it's targeted towards. And that helps go towards then the hitting the $150,000 that'll bring in that additional $50,000 grant.
Is the old bookmobile in service? Will there be a disruption in service between the two bookmobiles?
The bookmobile was running, and it is we are currently providing service with the van, with the library van, but that doesn't have anything to do with how the bookmobile is working. It has to do with COVID-19. So in order to provide a contactless service, we're using the van right now, but as soon as it is safe to do so, the old bookmobile can go back on the road. But we're really, really excited to have the new bookmobile be able to provide a safer service and to provide Wi-Fi out for people.
Mm-hmm. My name's Tom Halverson. You're listening to Voices and Views. My guests are Susie McIntyre, Library Director with the Great Falls Public Library, and Bill Tackey, Vice President of the Great Falls Public Library Foundation. They are involved with a bookmobile book-a-thon, and this will continue, you said, through March. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And how about some final words? Are we missing anything? Is there anything you want to leave our public radio audience with at this time?
I guess I would just point out, you know, there's many people out there who have memories of the bookmobile during their youth, particularly in our community. A number of our foundation members have talked about their experience with the bookmobile. Some of us, such as myself, did not have that experience. I grew up in a rural area where we didn't have a bookmobile. But for many people, just the idea of the bookmobile brings back good memories. It's a very easy accessed learning experience in the communities where it's provided, and it's a resource for people out in the rural areas that we service that really would not be able to access that type of learning. And it you know, stimulates people to think more about what they'd want to do in the future when they're a child and their mind is open to learning when they read about different parts of the world and different things. So I think that's what we're trying to preserve. We want to keep that access because not everybody can get to the library building on an easy basis. So the bookmobile is really an extension, and it's not past its time. It's really still very much a resource that can be used well. As Susie indicated, with the Wi-Fi, there will be, you know, increased access to areas that don't have that access.
And Susie,
the last thing I'd like to say is just how grateful the library is for the support of the foundation and for all the community members that continue to value literacy and the services that the library provides. And so we just thank you so much for your support.
I want to thank our guests today, Susie McIntyre and Bill Tackey. Good luck with your campaign, and thank you for being here on Voices and Views.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks so much.